This conference is being recorded.
You got me, Dan?
Gotcha.
Okay.
All right, we're in.
All right.
Did anybody else have difficulty getting on initially?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
That was weird. I did it three times, and the third time it worked. I don't know. It's...
All right. Yeah, whatever.
All right, whatever.
Move on. So, yeah, let's move on. So if y'all go to your emails, you'll see that there's a document there for you. And, okay. Now the, if we go to, everybody see the document?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, there's a lot of different pieces here, because what I'd like to do is I'd like to crystallize a lot of what we're saying into one pusik, which really is the foundation stone of everything the Rambam is doing. And in essence, if I had to think of a topic for this a title for this class, I would call it Rambam the Renaissance Man, because what I really believe, and I think it really is the core and essence of what the Rambam is about, and really what Judaism is about today, is the concept of Renaissance. And complete with the idea of a dark age, and the possibility of a restoration of a thought system that existed in ancient times, which we've been held back from by a scholasticism. And I think that what the Rambam is about is it parallels that in every essential way. And explicitly so. I'm not saying this is some sort of nice theory which one can indirectly prove through different remote things in the Rambam, but rather this is explicitly what the Rambam says, and all we have to do is allow him to speak for himself, and it's self-evident that that's what he's saying. Now, how so? In what way is Rambam a Renaissance man, the very initiator of the Renaissance? And I'm saying this not just for Judaism, but for the world. In other words, the Rambam is a historic agent in the Jewish people's redemptive process. How so? Now, in a sense, we get a feeling for that. The Jewish people says, "Me Moshe ad Moshe lo kam ka Moshe." From Moses till Moses, there was none like Moses. But in what sense, really, is that so? And I think that really, that can be understood through one pasuk that the Rambam uses continuously in every single work, and that is B'shem Hashem Kel Olam. And in the name of God, the God of the universe, of the Olam. Now, what's the great significance of B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam? The significance of this is we will see. Now. What I'd like to do is I would like to, as far as we can, crystallize this central theme of B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam, and what calling out in the name of God that this pasuk is talking about was Avraham Avinu doing. And in what way was Rambam continuing that process, such that he identifies himself so absolutely with that pasuk? He is, in essence, a Kuri B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam in all of his works, be it the Mishnah Torah, be it the introduction to the Perush Mishnayos, be it the Amor Nevuchim. Every single thing that he wrote was started off with Bashima Shenkelewa. She was a loyal continuer of the Abrahamic path. So what exactly is that? Now, the issue lies in an understanding of the olam. In other words, there is an olam, and then there is a kel olam, and then there is a korei b'shem olam. There is an olam, there is a god of that olam, and then there is someone who calls out in the name of that god. Vayikra b'shem Hashem kel olam. Now, what is that? So what it is, it would seem, is a Renaissance man. In other words, a person who enables, who is the father of humanity, in the sense that he allows humanity to know what it is. And this is really the continuation of the essay I wrote about Know Thyself. So the fact is, we can't know ourselves. We are constituted, and we know ourselves via being initiated and born, as it were, into an intellectual tradition. And an intellectual tradition has to have a beginner, because in the absence of a beginner, in the absence of the person who is Korei B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam, mankind, all of us, will be lost in a dark age. And that's just our nature. Our nature is to know what our community allows us to know. And if our community is the Dark Ages, we will know Dark Ages mentality, and we'll believe in magic, and we will not be thinking, and we will be fearful and afraid of goblins and the whole business. And if we are so fortunate as to go through a school system which educates us to knowledge, then the very same person who would have been a sorcerer could be a professor of great note. And the same person who would be a head of a monastery could be a great physicist, and so on and so on. But all of this rests upon a foundational awareness and conviction and belief on the part of the people in Shem Hashem Kel Olam, that there is a knowledge out there that can be pursued, and more importantly, that it constitutes, that it's not just something which we can know about planetary bodies. We can't just discover things like gravity. We can also discover, we don't just discover natural laws about things other than ourselves. The natural law applies to ourselves. And that is the quintessential idea of the Shem Hashem Kel Olam, that he called out to people. A, there is no such thing as magic. There is just a natural law that applies to all things. And secondly, that is not just a basis for understanding the world around us, it's the basis for understanding our human environment and ourselves, both things. Now this idea is so monumental. Even the idea that there is a natural law that governs all things is monumental, and in the history of mankind is only just begun to take root in the last few years historically. And the second part, that knowledge extends not just to planetary bodies, but to humanity and to individuals and the way we organize our lives, that has not yet taken root. Just the very baby beginnings of considering that. There was a flash of insight by the philosophs in Europe, which eventuated in the democratic movement and the establishment of America and other democracies. There's just the baby beginnings of that. It's not really carried through. Just the very baby beginnings of considering that these truths we hold to be self-evident, that the creator of the world endows all men with certain rights, and that law has to be based upon that natural wisdom also. Just the very baby beginnings of that. But this foundational idea is the Shem Hashem Kel Olam. And we see it from the... I just want to show how that covers, goes through the Rambam's work. and the implications for the work that needs to be done. Yesoda Yesodos, Ve'amud HaChachmos, and I put certain words in red. I only see Rabbi Rosenthal looking at the document. Has everybody else got the document, able to look at it?
Yeah.
Okay. So in red, it says I'm sorry?
I changed the title.
You changed the title?
You hear what it says?
Oh, thank you, Rabbi Rosenthal. So the Renaissance man's work begins with the introduction of the idea of there being an all-encompassing knowledge, an all-encompassing causality, which points to God, which points to a source outside of our universe, a source of mind incomprehensible to us and beyond us. But we see this through a great causal wisdom that we see expressing itself to the degree that we see it in the universe and in ourselves. Yesoda Yesodos V'amud HaChachmos, and I emphasize Amud, the pillar of wisdom, the foundation of religion, and the pillar of sciences, because religion has to do with the highest principles. The theory of mind and metaphysics and the theory of mind and the ultimate principles. The chachmos has to do with the application of the principles to understanding the various subjects around us. So, for example, let's take an example, a simple example. The yesod is that there is a mamzi kol nimsa. And the yesod is there is a causal source. There is a causality and a causal source. Now, as Newton was looking for the causal mechanism of the planetary bodies, he found gravity. It's true. He found that there is some sort of force that explains the motion of all the bodies. But deeper than that, what happened the moment before he saw the apple? He saw the apple fall, and he realized the falling apple is not an expression of an apple, it's an expression of the bodies. All bodies attract each other, not just the apple and the earth. And from that he intuited the nature of the relations between of motion of not just an apple and a body, but any body of any size, of any mass. So, but what was the step before that? The step before that was the deep conviction that there is a causal mechanism. He didn't know what the causal mechanism was, but he knew that there was a causal mechanism, and that is the yesod. The yesod of every scientist and every thinker and every rational person is that there is a rationality out there to be discovered. And if one didn't have that yesod before one's scientific inquiry, but before one's rational enterprise, there could not be any rational enterprise. Because every rational enterprise is an investing of one's entire life in seeking something. And the only way you can invest your entire life in seeking something is if you believe it's there before you found it. Because if you found it already, there'd be no research. All research is founded upon a deeper belief, a foundational yesod, that the world is lawful and intelligible. And then comes the derech ha-emes, the seeking of truth, to oneself know what that emes is. But the presupposition is that there is an emes to be found. Now in that, Avraham Avinu was identical to Newton. He might not have known the clarity of chochmos of Newton. And Newton doesn't know the clarity of chochmos that will be known later. And in 1,000 years, what Newton thought will be as laughable as what Avraham Avinu thought about astronomy, about physics. But one thing will remain the same, and that is that the same conviction that Einstein had and that Newton had and whoever will be the scientist in 1,000 years from now will have, that there is a rationality to be found, is the identical and same conviction in Yesod that Rambam had, and that Avraham Avinu had, and that all men of thought and Mada will always have. The concept of Mada is the same. The particular formulation of Mada that exist at a given time, that changes. So the Shem Hashem Kel Olam remains the same, that there is a causal order that, that whose beauty and majesty encompasses everything, is the same. The source of divine mind that points to, which is outside of our universe, is the same. The particular formulation of what is that, how do we best see that causal order in our time, that is going to ever be changing and can never be complete. So Yesoda Yesodos V'Amar HaChachmas. So the foundation of foundations and the pillar of all sciences. Lei Dash Yesha Matzir Rishon is to know that there is a causal order that points to a reality beyond our material world. V'Hu Mamsi Kol Nimsa, and I emphasize Kol Nimsa because that's the point. All of them. Not the ones that we apprehend. And certainly not just the ones outside of ourselves, but all of them, from Earth to the Sun to every planet and piece of matter in the universe, and man included. The Chol Anintzei Mishamayim V'Aretz, and all the existing entities from heaven and Earth, Umashe Beinehem, and what is between them, Lo Nimtzu Ela Me'amitat Himatzo. None of them would exist if it were not for the necessity of his existence, the logical necessity of his existence. Now, from this primary belief that there is a causal reality out there which points to a source of which we call God, comes the possibility of a derech emes. From a belief in emes as an external reality comes a derech emes, which means the quest to know that truth as best we can know it. Here's Anamita Simato, and there's the Derham. Now that, and that is, I'm sorry, I forgot to put it in. Just give me 1 second to put that in. I apologize to keep you waiting another bit, but it's hard to remember all the different things to put in. Okay, I'm going to put it in now, copy it, and put it in. Okay, it's in there. Okay, let me continue. I apologize for that again.
Rabbi, what did you add? I'm lost.
I just cut and paste another piece of document, which we'll come to in a little bit.
Okay, fine.
And it's just going to pop
now,
it there, or do we have to do something?
No, you don't have to do anything. It's just I didn't have a particular piece in this document, which I now cut and paste and put in.
No, I'm saying on our docs, it's just going to pop in there?
Yeah.
Yes.
I saved it, and it'll go in, and you're good. Okay. Now, this establishing of Yesod is, if you think about it, the Renaissance itself. The Renaissance itself was and is an incomplete Abrahamic revolution, because what in essence happened was that, and of course, Greece itself was in essence an Abrahamic revolution. Greece was an Abrahamic revolution, and the Renaissance, the return to the thought of Greece, was also an Abrahamic revolution. How so? Because in essence, what Socrates said, and what Plato said, and what Aristotle said, was the iso deus odo. Namely, that if we use our minds to look at our universe around us, that there is a causal order behind it, and the issue is not to what degree they were able to apply that to their observations. The issue is the fundamental core concept they had, and from that concept, everything else can come. If you are seeking honestly seeking the application of this principle, then physics will not, mathematics will not be long in coming, and physics will not be long in coming, and chemistry will not be long in coming, and biology will not be long in coming, and everything else will not be long in coming. In historic terms, it may take 100 years, it may take 200 years, but compared to the millions of years of biological humanity and the thousands of years of civilized humanity, it's nothing, right? It'll be a few hundred years. The distance between the Renaissance in the 1600s, or the true clarification, the true organization of humanity around that, in World War II, in the 1940s, and the explosion of technology we have today, is 60 years. 60 years, and I think that if there's articles about this, and if you calculate how many of the big insights have been done technologically and scientifically, the vast majority of them have occurred in the last 20, 30 years. Now, in the history of humanity, that's infinitesimal. It's nothing. In the history of the world, it's so small it can't even be measured. So the speed by which mankind can become knowledgeable and intelligent and wise in its action after it establishes this core principle is very, very fast. Now, that is what I'm talking about when I'm saying that Rambam was the Renaissance man, in the sense that he restored the community to the thinking of Avraham Avinu. Now, so what comes from this? What comes from this is the need to reorganize the thinking of the people in all of its fundamental dimensions around this concept. And that is what it really means to do B'Shem Hashem Kilola. It means to focus people's attention around the fact that they need to reconceive in a fundamental level what they are doing, which is not to say that what's being done isn't valuable, but which is to say that there's fundamental clarifications that need to be done in the framework in which what we're doing is being done, and that includes one's Torah study. One's Torah study has to be organized in a foundationally different way if it is truly to be expressive of B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. And if we think about it, we will see that there is no conclusion other than realizing that that's what Rambam's work is about. Rambam's work is about dramatically shifting the Talmud Torah process to vastly increase the degree to which it can be an expression of B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. And it's just so obvious, and we've talked about it so many times, I'm not even going to go into all the symptoms and expressions of that, because it's self-evident. Now, I just want to pinpoint certain fundamental features of that, certain fundamental terms. It is the foundation of foundations and the pillar of wisdom, the Amud HaChachmos, to know that there is a first creator, a first entity, which implies a hierarchy of causal entities that owe their existence, that can be logically discerned and can logically be seen to be dependent upon the first. There's a second, a third, a fourth, a tenth, whatever, that are dependent upon the first. And since he is the first, he brings into being all that exists, and all the entities from heaven and earth, which between them would not exist if it weren't for the Amitasimatsu. Now let's take a look at what the Korei B'Shem Hashem Kiel Olam does. So in his book, what's he going to do? The purpose of his book is what? Ad she'yu kol ha'dinin gluyin l'katan l'gadol. So all the dinim will be known to a katan and a gadol. But in what way will they be known? They will be known as the application of the Yesod HaYesodos to the human framework. The gravity of humanity, or as the Rambam would say it, the derech of man. Because the derech of something is the way in which it expresses the imprint of B'Shem Hashem Kiel Olam. It doesn't just arbitrarily move. It moves in that way which is expressive of its idea, which is its place in the hierarchy its place in Metzius, its place in the Metzius hierarchy, which ultimately will be a logical theoretical progression demanding the Matzi Rishon. So it is to know that I'm the Matzi Sheni, I'm the Matzi Yasiri, I'm the Matzi whatever I am, you see? So to know these dinim is to know one's place in the hierarchy of existence, and to know that in knowing the Torah, I am knowing the derech of the Adam in the same way as I can know the derech of an element, and I can know the derech of a star, and I can know the derech of any matzui in this Metzius. And it's very, very important in a Renaissance that everybody understand that. But that's what B'Shem Hashem Kiel Olam means. It means leaving behind the way, the derech that we used to conduct ourselves. The superstitious derech, the traditional derech, whatever the derech is. All these things have to be certain parts of them have to be let go of, and certain parts have to be modified in a very, very major way. And we can immediately know, and if we just are honest about it, it's self-evident, that if what the Rambam here were to be talking about were to occur, that would be a radical shift in what Judaism is. So that all the dinim will be known to a katan and a gadol in the din of every mitzvah and the din of all the dvarim which the chachamim gave up. Now, if we're to be honest about what it is that people in fact know today, it's not even remotely close to that. There is no systematic knowledge of the Torah in any community in the world, and there hasn't been in any time that we've ever known in history. And this isn't accidental. We can't imagine that the educational processes that we are using could ever possibly produce such a result. You can't imagine it. We're so locked into our scholastic processes that we don't pay attention to that fact. But if we were to ask ourselves, do our educational processes, which we are doing today, have the capacity to create Jewish people in which every person, katan and gadol, knows all the dinim of the Torah, knows them in the Shem Hashem Kiel Olam way, are we capable of producing that? Not even remotely. Not even remotely. We wouldn't even know how to begin to start. So when the Rambam states, it's his bold objective, that a Jewish people, which is worthy of the Abrahamic vision, of the Abrahamic derech, a Jewish people whose Torah is reflective of the Yesod HaYesodos and the Emet HaChokhmos, should have an awareness of that overarching Chokhmah in which the dinim of the Torah are all known to all Jews, katan and gadol, that is a renaissance. That is not a business as usual. That's a renaissance. Now,
Rabbi, what do you mean by scholasticism?
By scholasticism, I mean a rehashing of the scholarship of many, many, many generations, as opposed to a true understanding of the phenomenon. You see what I mean, Dan?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm saying over that the Maharsha says this, and the Rashi says that, and the Ramban says the third thing, and the other one. You see?
Yeah.
Not that these people don't have important things to say, But it's a repeating of that which has been said. It's not a systematic understanding of what the phenomenon really is. You see what I mean, Dan?
Yeah.
Which, again, does not mean that the Ramban has nothing to say. I'm not saying that. But in the scholastic tradition, the statements of people that may be valuable in their own right become fossilized into a reciting of that which has been said and a saying it in the way which is appropriate to say it and asking of questions which are the appropriate questions to ask and giving them answers to the appropriate answers to give and that in a rote, dead, robotic way.
That sounds like a dogma.
Yes.
But don't people use scholasticism don't people use that word in a positive way? Scholasticism?
No.
It could. When it was first created, it was thought of in a positive way. But today, scholasticism has a completely negative connotation in the sense of weaving together accepted meanings of texts to the exclusion of really exploring what the thing is. Did I mean, Dan?
Yeah.
I guess the height of that would be the most complete.
Looking at Wikipedia here, I mean it's called Flessen derived from the Latin word whatever, which means that which belongs to the school and was a method of learning taught by academics of medieval universities, 1100 to 1500. Flessen originally attempt to reconcile ancient classical philosophy with medieval Christian theology.
Yes. Which means...
And not a tool of a method of learning, but places emphasis on dialectical reasoning. Okay. Whatever.
Right. In other words, it's a method of explaining away the world.
Gosh.
In a way which reconciles texts, but ignores observations of the real world. Aristotle says that the moon does this. Now, it might well be that you can look at the moon and see, obviously, the moon does not do that. And I guess the most famous story of that is Galileo, you know? I don't know if it's apocryphal or if it's a real story, but there was some principle that demanded that there be a certain amount of stars. And Galileo found another star, you know? another planet. So he announced to the scholastic world that he had found another planet. And he was informed that according to Christian theology and according to Aristotle, there could not be another planet because that would mess up the entire Aristotelian system, which was based around a certain number of planets. So Galileo looked at his telescope, and he said, "But yet she turns." In other words, I see it. You know, it's right there, you know?
Yeah.
So that is the best example of scholasticism. The scholastic has his mind firmly positioned among the great books that are said to be the truths of the great people and the way the current talk and current thinking about this, to the exclusion of observing what really is happening with his senses and really honestly thinking about it. That's what is known today as scholasticism. Okay, Dan?
Yeah. It seems like Judaism today is even... Has evolved to even something lower than that. I mean, people don't even know what the great Jewish masters have said. It's just like a jumble of ideas.
Yeah, there's a highly scholasticized scholarship. And we'll see in a second that the Rambam makes explicit reference to that as a very, very deep problem. Okay, but of course you can immediately see that this is the death knell for the Shem Hashem Kel Olam, and once the community is immersed in that, it's going to require a Galileo, it's going to require a Newton, it's going to require a Renaissance to shatter that the comfort and security of that vision, and reopen there is a real knowledge out there which we can gradually move towards. Now, and that's what the Rambam is talking about. But there's a caveat. Lefikach, karati shein chibor zeh, Mishneh Torah. I call this my work, my Renaissance work, the Mishneh Torah, the repetition of the Torah. Lefisha Adam Korei Torah Shebiksav Tchila. A person reads the Torah Shebiksav first. V'achakach Korei V'zeh. He reads the Torah Shebiksav first, and he reads this. V'yadea mimeno Torah Shebal Peh Kula. And knows from it the entire Torah Shebal Peh. V'yadea likro sefer echer b'neyam. Doesn't need to read any other book. But you can immediately see that this presupposes a certain ability. What ability is that?
To look outside of the scholastic framework.
True, but in Rambam's terms, what does that require? A person knows how to do what?
Kore anything?
And that's not a kore. It requires a kore. You see? And that slips by us. Because we take it as a given. The person knows how to read. Everyone who doesn't know how to read. What are we, illiterate? But yet, if we think about it, we will see that reading is not such a simple thing. What does Rambam mean by reading? That a person can read a comic book? That's not what he means. One of the very first chapters in the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam talks about a wise person who asked him a question. And he said, how could it be that God rewarded Adam for his chait? Adam was told not to eat from the fruit of the tree of good and evil, and when he did so, he got the crowning glory of human civilization, the ability of aesthetics to tell the difference between good and evil, and do crafts. That seems absurd, that a person would be rewarded for his misdeed. So the Rambam, it's very interesting, says this guy's a wise man. So then he attacks this guy furiously. And he said, if you would for a moment let go of your eating of food, your feasting, and your satisfying your appetites, and you would read the book, and you would stop reading the book of greatest wisdom, as if you were reading a piece of cheap literature, you would never have thought of it this way, and you would know something. Very interesting. Calls the guy a wise man, but he attacks, in his answer, he attacks him extremely powerfully. What do you see from this? You see from this that the person thought he could read the Torah, but his criterion of what constitutes reading is vastly off base. The reading that the Rambam is talking about is a reading of a totally different order. It's the reading of one who has comprehended the Shem Hashem Kel Olam, and that thing which this person obviously has. It require, and in our world, in the Renaissance world, is going to require a very, very careful path of restoration to become a reader in the sense that the Rambam is talking about being a reader. Why? Because in our culture, the criteria, the reading comprehension capacities that are required for reading a piece of literature are very, very low.
Rabbi?
Go ahead.
Wouldn't it be better to use this phrase, Lefish Adam, Lo made kor atarsh v'sav tila vachach lo made v'zeh.
No.
Because limud is a higher is kriya is a lower level of limud. Limud is or misboning. Lefish adam misboning kor atarsh v'sav tila vachach misboning v'zeh.
No.
Why not?
Because to lo made or kore requires what is that? What is lomade and kore? What is learning and misbonane and maskil rather than kore? As Reb Rosenthal says correctly, those are higher levels, right? So what are those? Though lomade and maven and maskil have to do with formulating one's own principles. In other words, reading a work or observing a material reality and grasping the underlying causal principle, even though it hasn't been stated. That it has various levels. Lomade means extending or clarifying a principle which is given, but within still the same framework. Maven means that one grasps a principle, but in order to really understand the principle, one has to intuitively understand that it's an example, a special case of a higher principle. Is a maven davar mitach davar. A maskil means that one has to be able to, in order to understand how this principle works, one has to make a fundamental reformulation of one's core first principle. So that's a maskil. Let's go all the way up to the first principles. So when Rambam, let's use an example of the Rambam. So when the Rambam understood a particular area of mitzvah, he was correct. When he understood its causal mechanism, he was maven. He saw that the, let's say, in some remote piece of the Talmud, there was a principle that could explain this Mishnah, which was vastly far away from it. He was maven. When he understood how all these halachos came together to his formulation of the Yesodi Yesodos, he was maskil. Okay? Remember as well?
Yep.
Now, and he talks, the Rambam talks about this process, what he did. That he was maven in the Sfarim and he was maskil. What he was maven and what he was maskil. To look through the sea of literature that the Jewish people had, which was ill understood because of the dark age in which it was in, and to see through it and create out of that a coherent system, that required it being a binosi basvara, right? That's binosi basvara. And that's the Mishnah Torah. But to understand the foundational basis of the Shema Shem Kil Olam of the Nevi'im and the Torah Shebiktav, from which this all emanates, that's a maskil, and that's the Nornavuch. Now, moving ahead, so it requires a Torah. Now, we can see logically that the sort of results that the Rambam is talking about is so remote from the result that we are getting, even by people who are reading his book, that there's only two possible understandings. Either the Rambam was vastly off base as to what it was that his book could possibly accomplish, or we are vastly far from the sort of koray that he's talking about. And I think that it's self-evident that what's happening here is that we are vastly far from the Torah that he is talking about. And that's what he's saying in the Mo'nevuchim. We aren't even that wise man. We're all suffering from that problem of that wise man. We don't want to transform ourselves, to develop ourselves, to educate ourselves, to mature to the point that we could be that Torah. We want the result of being that Torah without the effort and transformation and maturational process that it would involve. Now, where do we see that? I just want to show that is the essence of what the Rambam is saying. Okay. I'm skipping ahead to Sefer Rishon. So after this introduction, the Rambam describes what his outline of his work is going to be. And the very first book, which is Sefer Hamada. Sefer Rishon. Echlo bo kol mitzvot shehin ikir das Moshe.
Rabbi, aren't you skipping?
Yeah, I'm skipping a little bit.
All right.
Echlo bo kol mitzvot shehin ikir das Moshe. I will include all the mitzvot, which are the essence of the das of Moshe. V'tzarich adam leido san tchilas hakol. And these are what a person must know first. And here, Rabbi Rosenfeld's point is correct. These are what one must know. The problem is a catch-22 problem. In order to korei the Mishnah Torah, one must be yodea certain things. You see? And to be yodea those things presupposes, it is beyond the capacity of a dark age Jewish community, and presupposes a renaissance in that Jewish community. Kegon Yichud Shemo Baruchov, namely the oneness of God, Isser of Avodah Zarah, the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, The Karate Shame Sefer is this, Sefer Amada. And I call this book the Book of Knowledge. In other words, there has to be a resurrection of the concept of Mada in the Jewish people in order for there to be a Korah. And if we think about it, that's clearly the case. If a Newton is to be looking at a book, he's going to see a vastly different book than a person who reads comic books and plays video games all day long. That person who reads comic books and plays video games all day long looks at the Torah, what's he going to see? Looks at the Rambam, what's he going to see? He's going to see nothing. He can't see anything. But if a person with the mindset, that doesn't have to be a Newton, a person who's educated in some sort of way and has shown how the Rambam is of the same kind, that person can see and read it in a totally different manner. Now, but that is going to require a foundational renaissance in the Jewish mentality. Now, the exact nature of that, the Rambam identifies, so I'm going to have to stop at this point now, and that he talks about in the Sefer HaMitzvos. The Sefer HaMitzvos was written as a sort of companion to the Mishneh Torah in order to explain what the Mishneh Torah was about. And if we look at it, honestly, we will see that the Rambam is being pretty clear about what the issue is in his own opinion and in his reading of the Sifrei HaNeviim. And I'm going to complete my thought today with that. And this is the Sefer HaMitzvos. Kasher his barali inyan zeh. When this notion came to my mind, namely to present the entire mitzvah system to the Jewish people. Chafasti l'cha beres ha-sefer. I wanted to make the book. V'rak la'azkir es ha-mitzvahs kula. I wanted to mention just the mitzvahs. U'limnosan b'akdamas ha-sefer. And put them in the introduction to the book, which he does do in the Mishneh Torah. Takpani tza'ar. Shekvar nitzarti bo shanim. A terrible sadness hit me, which has been bothering me for years. V'hu, which is. Sheminyan and mitzvahs kvar dimu bo inyanim lo chal l'tayr otzem etzem zehusa. The people say about them things which I cannot find anything good to say about. Now, what's really telling is why this occurred. How could it be that the Jewish people has books about the mitzvahs which the Rambam looks at and causes him this horrible pain, and he cannot say anything good about? What does that mean? Ki kol mi she'asak b'minyanam. And again, the same word kol here. Everyone who occupied himself with the counting of the mitzvahs. O b'chibur sefer al mashu minyanam. Or anybody who wrote a book about this topic. Kulam nimshichu achar baal halachas gedolos. They all are expressions of halachas gedolos. In the same sort of way, I just would give an example of what I'm talking about here. And if you look at scholarship today, you'll see that in essence, all halacha today is extensions of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Or in the Sephardic world, it's all extensions of Rav Avadya Yosef. You know, there's nothing really terribly beyond that. As Rav Avadya Yosef in this issue, so we apply it to this to particular. Rav Moshe Feinstein says in this issue, so we apply it to this particular. Now, going back in time, the real beginnings of this were the Baal Halachas Gedolos. And look what the Rambam says about it. Kulam nimshichu achar Baal Halachas Gedolos. And it was the entirety of mitzvah scholarship is all, in essence, founded upon one man. His name was the Baal Halachas Gedolos. V'lo natu mikavanosa v'minyanam ela netiyamata. None of them are moving away from his essential approach, except a tiny amount. In other words, scholasticism, a dead, robotic repetition. And look at the way he describes it. Ki'ilu kafu hadeos, the maimar ha'isha zeh. As if all minds have frozen around the statements of this man. V'afilu baal sefer mitzvahs mefor samreit yishu samleiv. I guess he says that whatever, one person knows a little something, but in essence he hasn't touched the problem. And here the Rambam defines What really is the nature of this problem, this scholasticism which the Renaissance man sees? What is its true meaning in Jewish terms? In logical terms, it's clear what it means. It means that thought has ended, and reciting of religious reciting of what the Baal HaLachos Gedolos is saying takes its place. But what is the meaning of this in Jewish terms? Interesting. V'Hashem Yisrael Yodea, and God Himself knows. V'Eid, and He is my witness. Ki Kechol Shehir Harti Al Din Yonaseya, that the more I looked at their imaginings, V'Mashemanu, Shem Moni Mashemira Filibi and Rishon Shem Lamnaso, when I look at their imaginings and see that they count as a mitzvah, what even a cursory glance will tell you is not a mitzvah. They all follow each other. The li is bonus without any reflective, without any intellectual capacity. Gadol be'inai asoneinu. Our civilizational tragedy became clear in my mind. Vinis ames hechrech yumo yisol aleinu. And I realized before me the prophetic threat which had been said to us. V'tehi lachem chazus akol, and your vision shall be, of everyone shall be, k'divrei ha-sefer ha-chato, like the words of a closed book, the words of Yeshayahu. In other words, the Rambam saw this dark age, this scholasticism, this loss of thought, hidbonenu's thought capacity, this disconnect going, which has to indicate a disconnect from the Yesoda Yesodos, the absence of ability to read, which is the absolute, which is the civilizational absence of ability to think, which is the absence of ability to analyze principles as they emerge from one's observational scientific reality, the absence of Mada, which is the absence of the true understanding of the Yesoda Yesodos and how Torah fits into that. That is a national tragedy. It's a human tragedy. It's the snuffing out of the entirety of the vision of Avraham Avinu, and it's a dark age, predicted by Yeshayahu himself. How so? Let's take a look at what Yeshayahu says. V'tilachem chazus akol. What I want to do is I want to read it inside. Rather than what the little piece the Rambam quotes, I want to see it inside. Here it is, I'm going to read it. It's Yeshayah Chavtet. Hoi, Ariel, Ariel. Oh, whoa, the Ariel, Ariel. Ariel is Jerusalem, named after the Mizbeach, the altar, which indicates and points to man's need to transform himself into a mind, letting go of scholasticism and connection to imagination, and becoming Lifnei Hashem, becoming before the creator of heavens and earth. Hoi, Ariel, Ariel. Oh, whoa, Ariel, Ariel. Kiryas Chana David, the area of Chana and David. Sifu Shana Shana Chagim and Kofu. Year after year, useless holidays are occurring. Vatikotil Ariel. I will cause pain to Ariel. Vaita taniya vonia, vaitalik Ariel. It will become like a, I guess this means like a boat bobbing around, and until it becomes like Ariel again. V'chaniti kedur aleich, v'tzarti aleich mutzav, v'akimasi aleich mitziros. It'll be a siege brought upon Ariel. V'shafalt meret tidaberi, u'me'afar tishach imrasach v'aya, ke'ov meret toleich, u'me'afar imrasach tzavseif. Brought down to dust. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit to Pasuk Zayin. V'haya ka'achalom chazon laila. It will be like the vision of at night. Hamon kol goyim hatzovim al Ariel. It will be a mass of nations sieging Ariel. V'chol tzoveo metzadeteo v'amtikim la. All around it will be siege engines, causing her suffering. V'haya kasher yachalom ha-ra'ev v'hinei ochel. just as the fantasizer, the dreamer, imagines that he's eating. But in reality, he's hungry. The he keeps Varekanav show. He wakes up and realizes his soul is empty. Kasher yachalom atzameh, as the thirsty person dreams, v'hineh shesei, he's drinking. V'hikitz v'hineh yef, and he wakes up and he realizes he's parched. V'nof show shokeka, his soul is yearning. Kain yef, so will be. Hamon kol agoyim atzavim Israel, because of the massive people who are sieging Ariel. Now, why is this going to occur? Why is this going to occur? Kismamus mahu, be baffled. Kishtashu v'sho, shachru v'lo yayin, no v'lo sheikhar. The Jewish people were drunk, not from wine. They were moved, but not from liquor. Ki nasach aleichem Hashem ruach tardima. Hashem put upon you a spirit of great sleep. Vayatzem esenich, a dark age. Vayatzem esenich, he closed your eyes. Esan v'yim ves roshechem hachozim kisa. He closed the access to the Nevi'im and to your true leaders. And what comes in its stead in a dark age? Vatehi lachem chazus hakol. The vision of everyone will be, and again, hakol, of everyone, kidivrei ha-sefer ha-chatum, will become illiterate without access to our book. It is a locked book. Asher yitnu oto al yodei ha-sefer, you will give it to a person who thinks he knows how to read. Lemor krana zeh, read this. Vamar lo chal, and he says, I cannot. Ki chatum hu, it is sealed. V'nasa ha-sefer asher lo yoda sefer, and when he gives the book to someone who doesn't consider himself to be a scholar, Lemor krana zeh, says, read this. Vamar lo yadati sefer, and he says, I don't know how to read. So the condition that the Navi is saying, the military defeat, the anguish, the destruction of Ariel, is a direct reflection of the dark age of the Jewish people. Why were we so severely beaten then? And why are we in such severe trouble now? Because we have no Mada. It's precisely because we don't have the Mada necessary. We don't have a Shlomo. We don't have the Mada necessary to deal with our circumstance. And it's in the nature of the world that a small people, such as what we are, in the absence of Mada, Greece, so long as it was able to keep its intelligence going, was able to be a dominant power. But once it became preoccupied with eating and drinking and whatever it was that they were doing, homosexuality, they were overtaken, naturally, by a more powerful and dominant animal-human group. And so to the Jewish people. Hoi Ariel, Ariel. It's a necessary consequence that if we don't attend to our wisdom, we don't attend to our Mada, and we follow vain religiosities and vain mysticisms and vain cultishism, that we will be destroyed. And that's the issue. Then, what does the Radak say is the issue? What is this closing of the eyes? Radak. Vayatzein. He closed our eyes. Vayizgor, he closed. V'chen min ha-kol otzem einav kisa lechem. Like the voice closed their eyes. It covered you. Segar einechem shlo tiru. You close your eyes so you will not see. V'lo itchem levatchem. Lo itchem levatchem. Not you alone. Ela ha-neviyim. In other words, who did this? The neviyim. Shehem neviyei sheker. The Nevi'im were the Nevi'ei Sheker. In other words, this dark age was much more sinister than just something done by the individual people. But rather, there were certain religious individuals who got money and benefits and power from their false understanding, which created the dark age. The Nevi'ei Sheker. There are always those who make money by saying everything is fine and the way that you're doing things is okay and there's no need to change and grow and mature and develop. And these are going to be a checker. And they get paid very handsomely for that in every culture of the world. You rich baron, you're not oppressing the widow. You're not oppressing the society. You're not keeping everybody in hunger. You're a great guy. And now that your daughter is marrying, and you give me $10,000 to marry her to her beloved, I'll tell you all the wonderful things about how you are. Who is that? That's the priest. That's the minister. That's the rabbi. Paid servants of the baron. In the V.A. Sheker. And that's who it is that is at the root and core of the distortion and the injustice and the ignorance. Vet Roshechem HaChozim Kisa. Your seers have been covered. Who are they? The Heim Heim HaMa'atzmim HaZeinechem HaChlotiru. They are the very ones who are closing your eyes so you do not see. Umashamar ki nesach Hashem aleichem. When he says that Hashem put it upon you, klomar, this means kol kachu akisui chazak. The dark age is so intense. Ad shi yedameh ki miyashemu. It looks like it's from God. O pirusho al derech hashemein halev amazeh kemoshi pirash. So it looks like it's coming from God, but in reality, the dark age is the product of the distortion, which benefits the religious and the economic power brokers. Vatihilachem chazut hakol. And therefore, what is the vision? Nivuat hakol. Everyone's understanding of prophecy. Nivuat kol nivyei Hashem amitnabim lachem. The prophecy of all. Yeah. Kamo sefer chatum. Are locked in a scholasticism which cannot be penetrated. If you give these books to someone who should know how to read them, yomar lo chal ki chatumu. They're so connected to the scholastic mentality that they cannot anymore read these books. They don't look at Yeshayahu. They look at what the Lubavitch Rebbe says about Yeshayahu. They don't look at the Torah. They look at what the Bratzliver says about the Torah. They don't look at what is being said. They look at what the scholastic community says is being said. And we can no longer, therefore, read. We can no longer see. We can no longer think. As the Rambam says, the minds are frozen in the statement of that man. And I shouldn't have mentioned those people in particular. Let's generalize. We see what we are scholastically trained to see. We don't see the phenomenon for what they are. We see them completely immersed in our scholastic tradition of how to see them. And it's in that context that we understand what the Rambam was saying. When that wise man read the Torah, he was reading it from the perspective, the limited perspective, which allowed him to be what he was. Let's put it into contemporary terms. He was a smart guy in his shul. His rabbi every week gives him his drasha, which essentially tells him he's a good guy, and his family is a good family, and his Judaism is a good Judaism. And he's reading his Torah, right? He doesn't feel he needs to arouse himself from his cultural position because he looks around him and sees, compared to everybody else who is asleep, compared to everybody else who has been misled by false prophets, compared to everybody else who is reading through the scholastic tradition, he's just as good as everybody else. And he is. But the fact is, he hasn't begun to do what it takes to really consider the issues of the Torah. He hasn't begun to feel what it takes to arouse himself from the opinions that exist to seeing what the Torah is really about. So the Rambam says, he's a smart guy. He's not asking a bad question. But he's locked into a dark age, which keeps him from even beginning to know what reading the Torah is about. And not through his own fault, but through an ancient tradition of Sefer Chatum, which is really serving the interests of Nevi'ei Sheker, going back to ancient times. And this is a dark age, which Arambam comes to the picture and sees it as his mission to shake up. And this is what he's talking about when he identifies himself as coming, the Shem Hashem Kilola. Because if you see it, think about it, you'll see, this was very analogous to the situation that Avraham Avinu was facing. Avraham Avinu was also facing a community which was in lockstep around the power brokers of Nimrod and the people of that time. And were very comfortable around their religious notions. And were very threatened when Avraham Avinu said, the religious notions should be natural notions. They should be self-evidently emerging from observing the phenomenon of the location of my virus. There should be a logical connection between what we see with our eyes, what we see in the motion of the stars, and the Derech Emes, and the way we live. And there's none. There's zero. And that is Vayikra B'Shem Hashem Kil Olam, an awakening, a restoring of the Yesoda Yesodos to a community which is scholastic, which is frozen in mind, which is disconnected through getting security from following the V'yei Sheker, from being able to see phenomena for what they are, to read, reflect, consider. Any questions?
Yeah, Rob, I have a question on the words you made red.
To read?
Well, in the first line, the Kol Hanim Tzayim means Shamayim V'aretz?
Yes.
Why did you highlight V'aretz?
Because we are part of Aretz. Even if we... even if our scientific community reflects upon astronomy and reflects upon physics, it reflects upon it from the perspective of what do galaxies do, what do particles do. But don't find it within themselves to ask the question of what is the Derech Emes for man. What is the social order? I remember I just want to tell one story about this. I remember I was once traveling on TV Channel 13 to PBS, and it was one of my favorite stories. I've probably told them a million times, but again, it's important to remember it. And it was this show about the Nobel Prize winners give their opinions about the world. That was the show. Nobel Prize winners about the great issues of the day. Moderator, and there's this big auditorium full of Nobel Prize winners, and he was walking through the aisle, kind of like a game show house, and saying, what do you think about the situation in the Middle East, or something like that. Dr. So-and-so from MIT, whatever department. So Dr. So-and-so said something, which is very unremarkable. And then he goes another one, and I was starting to think, I'm about to change the channel. Until he gets to the third or fourth one. And then he gets to the fourth one. And says, Dr. So-and-so, what's your opinion? And this guy really was shocking. He gets up and says, Steve, I really am kind of bewildered by this entire show. He says, what do you mean? So he says, well, I have a certain expertise in, I forget what he was, the chemist, wherever he was, in chemistry. And in that area, I have certain knowledge. But I've never found, and I, you know, whenever I went to the university, I talked to all my friends, I've never found them to have any greater insight into human problems than anybody else. Why are we doing this? Why are we having the show? And at that point, I thought I was worth the entire thing just to see that guy, you know? Because that's the reality. The ability to apply the Yesod HaYesodos to a certain external object is fundamentally different than being able to apply it to human affairs, to have the energy and courage and tenacity to do so. And that's why the Rambam says, V'chol nimtzayim mishamayim varas. All the nimtzayim. And all the nimtzayim does not mean that one tests to make sure that the particles on Earth operate the same as the particles in Jupiter, as the particles in Mercury. That's still excluding a very important phenomenon. What is it? How do we distribute income? What does that do with organizing the institutions of the state? So that there's justice and equity and thoughtfulness in the motion of human affairs. What about that? So that that every individual human can be seen to be operating according to the same social laws as every other human. What about that? So that requires emphasis, because that was Avraham Avinu's breakthrough. He didn't just see justice as a natural phenomenon in material bodies. He saw that that had foundational implications to how man would live his life, to tzedakah u'mishpat, here on earth. And all the nimtzayim mishamayim varetz u'mashbinim. Okay, Dan?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to stop at this point. And the next question is, how do we, what happens now? What happens now? Now that we recognize this hate, we recognize this problem, how do we continue the Renaissance process? And the first and very mistaken notion is to think that somehow we can break free from the Dark Age just like that. And that's not true. The fact that one sees and notices and calls one's attention that one is living a Dark Age does not in and of itself make a Renaissance. It points to the need to begin the Renaissance, the imperative for the Renaissance. Because the book is just as closed for us as it is for anybody else. The mere fact that we know it's closed doesn't make it open. It means that it opens up the desire and the sense of need to start beginning the steps of reopening it. And how one goes through the steps of motion and development to reopening the book, which has been closed, that's, God willing, what we're going to be talking about next week. Any other questions?
Well, that's a very good point that you're making at the end, because even if you realize that what the Rambam is trying to do, doesn't mean if you start to snap open the Mishnah Torah from page one and start reading it, suddenly you will be defined as a Torah, because to be a Torah in Mishnah Torah is
right.
Extremely hard.
That's right. The fact that one... That the Navi tells us that we are chotem doesn't mean that we know the solution of how to let go of our hate and move away.
Or the derech tshuva. The derech tshuva.
But the first step is to realize things are not good. There is a problem that must be addressed, and cautiously, intelligently, moderately, but decisive. Okay, we'll stop at that point.
All right, have a good week, everyone. Bye.
Okay.
Rabbi, I just want to let you know I uploaded the past shiurim to the YU site.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Dan.
No problem.
And I'm going to try to look at your piece there on Tefillah and give you an answer today. Okay, Dan?
Oh, great, great. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for sending it to me.
Oh, okay.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.